Hello, good morning, and welcome to Raider Nation Radio. It's the morning tailgate. It's Monday. It's Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor. We're in our Las Vegas studios. Thank you so much for being with us this morning, as we got a lot to get into today here as we kick off the month of July. And we will talk to Matt Holder at 8 o'clock from Silver and Black Pride. We will talk to him about certain Raiders that they've had on the Tape Don't Lie breakdown between Zamir White, John Jenkins, and a whole lot more. We'll talk to Matt at 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock, we'll talk to Jesse Merrick from News 3. We'll get the lowdown on the sports scene here in Southern Nevada and in the Raiders' perspective as well. 702-365-9200 is the number to reach us here on both the text line and on the phone numbers. And for the text line, we will give you the key word for the summer of fun for this week's prize. You don't want to miss it. We'll do that in about 15 minutes time here on Raider Nation Radio. 702-365-9200 and hit us up on X at RNR 920 AM. It's Vinny and Clay here on your Monday. Thank you for being with us. And Vinny, when you experience like certain weather that we had over the past weekend, it makes you feel like the Raiders did a really good, smart move by planning on doing training camp in Costa Mesa.
Yeah, about it. There's a lot of different reasons why they're going to Southern California. There's something to be said about building camaraderie and chemistry, taking the show away from home. Oh, yeah. Being lodged up at a hotel for 2.5 weeks together. Nobody just returning back home after they work. Although there's a lot of players that do stay at the team hotel, rookies, undrafted free agents, guys that haven't found their lodging for the season. But first and foremost, this was a weather-driven decision. And, you know, when you understand that or take into account that the average high for Costa Mesa during the time period that the Raiders are going to be there is about 79, 80 degrees, compared to over 100 degrees here mm-hmm. in Las Vegas. It's been 100 and I was driving home from the Aces game. By the way, shout out to Leske Kahuna. They're the Dos Catas is the official tequila brand of the Las Vegas Aces. So I had the courtside seats, so the VIP access, ran into Mark Davis, and Max Crosby was there. Got a chance to talk to both of those guys briefly. Told Max in a couple of weeks, talked to Mark Davis, and he's excited about training camp. And it was great seeing the Aces win. Aja Wilson's now the leading scorer in franchise history, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah, incredible.
But talking to some people there affiliated with the Raiders and about, you know, being able to get your work done during training camp without having to worry or fight through the weather, because it's tough enough in training camp. Training camp is a, you know, there's a B word out there that I can't use on air, but it is. It's a daily grind and a daily just you have to suck it up and go out there and work whatever the weather conditions are. And it's a tough challenge. You're fighting for your job. You're trying to figure out, you know, whatever new scheme you're learning. Yeah, you're grinding it out with your teammates. It's tough. It's a long day. The survival of the fittest. It's all of those types of things. And it's tough enough as is, just as is. But then when you have to go out there and work in degree, you know, weather that's over 100 degrees, like the Raiders have had over the years, over these last 4 years in Henderson, I know, and we've brought up the
example.
You
can't get the same work done.
Well, you're thinking about it. And you're fighting through the weather in addition to everything else that you have to fight.
But all those guys that are kind of like in those positions where they're like, you know, they have to make a team, you know, they're under, you know, excruciating conditions if it would to be out here in Southern Nevada during those times. You got to take away that certain variable in order to get the best out of everybody.
Yeah, you know, you're allowing guys in California to be able to just pretty much primarily focus on the task mm-hmm. at hand rather than the task at hand, which is a challenge in and of itself. And oh my God, it's 105 degrees out here right now, and it's a brutal heat. And I know that we've talked about how just us being there and covering the practice, and I try to you know, avoid sitting in the shade or trying to find some shade. I feel like, you know, we're out here, we're professionals, we're doing our job. I'm going to grind through it as much as I can to get the best vantage point that I can. But you're thinking about it. You're like, man, it is hot out here right now, and you can only imagine what it's like to be out there with all your pads and, you know, fighting and clawing and doing all the things that you got to do during training camp. So definitely a much more conducive place. It's not to say anyone's soft or anything like that. I you know, just if you were out here, you'd understand what I'm talking about. And so taking the show to California, I think, is a good thing, and it will create a much more conducive place to get quality work in, where you're just focused on the work, not the work and the weather conditions, other than to say, man, it's beautiful out here right now. So, seeing Mark and seeing Max yesterday, it really hit me that we're just a couple of weeks away from not only the start of training camp, but as I look at the calendar today, it's July 8th. The first preseason game is August 9th. That means that there's, you do the math, I don't know how many days are in.
It's 33 days.
33 days away from the first preseason game.
62 days away from game one against the Chargers.
Right. So it is fast approaching. You feel it. There's an energy right now, I think, of anticipation, and can't wait to get this thing all started and see what the Raiders are all about this year and everyone else, you know, around the NFL. So we just have to kind of endure these next couple of weeks, get through these next 14 or 15 days or however many days it is before camp opens. July 21st is when rookies report. July 23rd is when veterans report. And on July 24th, they're at Jack Hammett Sports Complex. We'll be out there watching the Raiders practice for the first time.
How far away is the team facilities from Jack Hammett? They're pretty close.
I don't know what hotel the Raiders are staying at.
Okay.
But that's pretty much what they're going to have to do. I don't know what the progress has been on this, but one thing that, as part of the deal that they struck with Costa Mesa, what the intentions were, I don't know where they are, I'd have to check on this, but was right. So if you go to Jack Hammett Sports Complex, right across one street, the main street there, is Costa Mesa Junior College, and right next door to Jack Hammett, it kind of shares a parking lot, is Costa Mesa High School. So what they were trying to do was build a temporary locker room and weight room facility right there, at Costa Mesa High School. I don't know what progress was made on that, but if so, at the very least, they'll be able to get dressed there and right across or in that kind of parking lot, that shared parking lot, and that temporary facility, and get their weight room work done there. However, if they're not able to, if they weren't able to get that done, and there's still a few weeks to go before they're able to open it up, then what they would do is kind of like when they would go to Thousand Oaks to practice against the Rams, they commandeered a hotel, which is still what they'll do. But at that hotel, that's where they got dressed for practice, and then bussed over to the Rams facility, and that's also where they had their temporary weight room right there at the team hotel. So we'll see if it's that, or if it's or if they're able to get that thing done over at Costa Mesa Costa Mesa High School. Either way, they're going to have to transport themselves from whatever hotel they commandeer to the practice facility each day. So, I'm sure there's all kinds of hotels that are close to that facility. I'm sure they've already located one and are making preparations for that to be their, summer home for a couple weeks, 2.5 weeks.
And how great was that scene, though, last night over at Michelob Ultra Arena, though? You see, people saw some great spots of, Mark Davis and Max Crosby out there on the floor. And, for Mark Davis, I'm sure he was all smiles just because the team's playing great, but at the same time, he's getting great participation from the fans and engagement. And coming out on a hot night, on a hot day like that, does say a lot about what this team is.
It was nice and air-conditioned at the arena, so that felt good. Great energy. If you haven't been to an Aces game, if you're here locally, or if you want to come in from out of town, they're on a massive sellout streak right now, so getting tickets can be a little bit tough, but we all know where to go to get tickets if you need them. But I would urge you to go.
Les Kekahuna.
There you go. They do a really good, they have a great setup in their VIP lounge. It's one of those all-you-can-eat deals, and I'm on a diet, as is Mark Davis. We were talking about our little journeys. I've lost 34 pounds on the program that I'm on with Dr. Simpson, who comes on our show periodically. Mark's down. I didn't get the full update, but he's lost a lot of weight. And kind of, we're doing it sort of similar. It's a similar program that we're following, and it does. He was like, "It works, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, it definitely does." And he was kind of an inspiration for what I'm doing, because I saw him shedding weight, and I was like, man, that's, if he could do it, and I could do it. And we had talked about that at the NFL owners meetings. We had gone out to lunch, and I got a burger, and he got a burger too, but without the bread. And he's like, look at that. He's like, that bun looks pretty good over there, Vinny. I'm like, I'm so sorry, right? Because you don't want to do that. I haven't had a piece of bread in 6 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so I have not had.
Cutting out the bread.
Totally. It's just all protein, basically, mm-hmm. The keto diet, I guess, is what they call it. There's a couple other things that I'm incorporating as well, including working out. But it works. It does work. And, when I did this with Dr. Simpson, he was like, look, you're going to be talking about this on air, so you better follow through and do it. So that was all the motivation. More, I had a lot of motivation to do it. But knowing that if you're going to go out there and talk about this, don't make me look like an idiot. Be disciplined and, mm-hmm. and get it done. I go, I promise you, Dr. Simpson, I will. I'm about halfway home for where I want to be. So, but I know Mark was really excited about, the start of training camp and as is everybody, it's not the most pleasant situation, training camp, for the players. And, you have to get through it, but it's the first start of the 2024 journey of kind of officially, all the offseason programs, that was fine and that was good. But really when you start training camp, that's the first leg of the journey, and it's we talk about this all the time, Clay. Once that train leaves the station, it doesn't stop for anybody.
And it's
going to be churning until February, somewhere in February in New Orleans. That's where it'll all conclude, and we'll see who's still left on the train when it hits the depot in New Orleans.
Yeah, and this part of the offseason is one in which you have to say, all right, well, we're rolling with our guys. We've made some upgrades in the offseason, and we've made some moves. How much better are, certain teams that the Raiders are going to face better than what they were last year? And we'll take a break. We'll come back and take a look at certain divisions in and around the AFC and NFC throughout this week. But we'll start with the AFC North, because three bullseyes are right there for the Raiders on their schedule. We'll talk about those teams and how much have they improved from one year to the next. It's Raider Nation Radio, the Morning Tailgate with Vinny and Clay, here on your Monday.
In a lot of ways, he struggled as a rookie. That tank for 2 a year in 19 was tough. It was tough on everybody. It was tough on me as a coach. I know it was tough on him. No different for 9. Last year was a tough rookie year. And a lot of these young defensive linemen coming into their rookie year, especially the guys that are drafted at the top of the draft, they have to deal with expectations and all those type of things. He's somebody that can talk him through that process, what he went through. And every year he just kept getting better and better. But you can see with these guys, and Christian will talk about it, when the light bulb went on. And then, in my opinion, they just take ownership and create their own process. It turns into nutrition. It turns into the routine on and off the field. No different than 98. But that's what it's all about as a coach, seeing that come on. And then when they take ownership of it, it's awesome.
That's Raiders defensive line coach Rob Leonard talking about the growth of Christian Wilkins as he's seen it through how his career. We're back here on the Morning Tailgate, Raider Nation Radio. Thank you for being with us. All right, for the summer of fun, brought to you by Planet Nissan, we give you a keyword of the day to text in to 702-365-9200. That word today is money, M-O-N-E-Y, 702-365-9200, so you can qualify for the Cowboy Adventure in Alpine, Wyoming. That's right, just 39 miles outside of Jackson Hole. You get to stay at the Rockin' M Ranch for 5 nights. They got horseback riding adventures, fly fishing, and more, rental car, and $500 spending cash. Text the word money to 702-365-9200. They qualify to win. And I'll tell you what, you could win that. You could head out to Alpine, Wyoming, or you could just take the $3,000 cash money. It's up to you. That's why it's a summer of fun from Planet Nissan. Thank you again to Planet Nissan here on Raider Nation Radio. When we're talking about the AFC North opponents that are coming up for the Raiders, and did they get any better than they did last year? What kind of levels of improvement are we seeing from teams like the Baltimore Ravens, the Bengals, the Browns? Let's start with the Ravens, because that's your Week 2 opponent. And it's a mixed bag when you have to say, all right, did you improve from your 13-4 year?
Yeah, I'm a little bit dubious on that, whether they improved or not. In fact, I have a feeling that this is going to fall off a little bit for the Baltimore Ravens. It's easy to say, well, they signed Derrick Henry, and I think that was a good, prudent signing on a reasonable deal. They also brought back Justin Madubuike, their fine defensive tackle. But there were a lot of losses as well.
Oh, yes.
They ended up losing their defensive coordinator, Mike McDonald. He went on to greener pastures, literally, as the head coach now of the Seattle Seahawks. But they also lost Patrick Queen, their linebacker, Jadeveon Clowney, one of their defensive linemen, Geno Stone, a safety. On the offensive line, Morgan Moses, our good friend John Simpson, who for some reason couldn't find a place here with the Raiders, but is now a New York Jet after a really strong bounce-back season for him, or just breakthrough season for him last year. So there's been offensive line disruption. There's been a coaching change with their defensive coordinator. We all know that could be a little bit dicey. I don't care, you know, the how much familiarity there might be with, you know, the new coordinator or whatever they're trying to establish there. That's a transition, losing, you know, Patrick Queen, who you know, was a leader of their defense and somebody that produced a lot of stats. You knew what you were getting in Patrick Queen. Jadeveon Clowney, I know that he didn't live up to his you know, number one top draft billing, but he's been a serviceable defensive lineman for a long time now in the NFL. So that's a bit of a loss. So
yeah, it's going to be hard to replace some of those guys on the line. I kind of felt like even Lamar Jackson, as much as you want to see him improve, he was kind of beset by offensive line injuries. They couldn't necessarily commit to, you know, the consistent run game that they were looking for when they lost Ronnie Staley to a devastating early season injury. Marshall Yanda retired as well. So it's like, are you able to fill that many gaps? Because there's a lot of holes. And as you brought up, losing somebody like Mike McDonald, that says a lot, too. That you're going to have to go and try to find some sort of semblance of stability with Zach Orr. And that's an unknown quantity, too.
Yeah. And that's the battle of attrition that all teams, especially successful teams that draft and develop as well as the Ravens do, you're going to have losses. You can't pay all of your players. That's just the unfortunate aspect of a salary cap system. The Ravens have always done a really good job. This is why I give them a little bit of a let's wait and see before, you know, the bottom falls out on this team, which I'm not predicting that. I just don't know that they're going to be a 13, you know, win team again this year. I think they may have taken a slight step back for all the reasons that we talked about. However, I always give them a lot of leeway because they do such a good job of draft and development and replacement. They know typically, you know, when to move on from certain players because of salary restrictions, and always do a good job of making sure that the cupboard's not bare when those players do eventually leave. So we'll see who those replacements are and how viable they are in terms of, you know, filling all of those holes immediately and having no fall off. But it's hard for me to believe that there won't be some fall off.
I came back with the thoughts from Rob Leonard about the defensive line, all because it'll be an interesting test, because for so many years they were able to use Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins as running backs. You have to be able to stop the run. The run has to get stopped at the defensive line. And are the Raiders stronger than they were last year on this run defense? I think so. Are the Ravens strong enough to continue on this path to run first and be able to get first downs and dictate with Derrick Henry if they have an offensive line that's a little, you know, patchwork to begin with? Because we know that Henry is a player in decline in a way that, you know, if this offensive line could struggle, what kind of responsibilities and how much snap counts you got Derrick Henry on this team for? You got him at the nice price, but is he that weapon that's going to still allow somebody like Lamar Jackson to find guys downfield for mismatches for second-year player like Zay Flowers, for example?
You know what? Here's the thing. I'm not going to underestimate Derrick Henry, and I say that because I think there's going to be a little bit of chip on his shoulder. Knowing him, he's in the lab right now as we speak. There's not a player in this league that works harder than he is to get himself ready for the season. And so I guess this would be my advice to the Raiders. Yes, to answer all of your questions, yes, he absolutely is that viable weapon. Yes, he still is a physical force in the NFL. Yes, you're going to have to pack it on, get ready, because it's going to be a three-hour or two-hour afternoon of button heads with one of the most punishing runners this league has ever seen. I'm just going to go in with that mindset. whether it is or not, you know, we're gonna find out. But if I'm the Raiders, that's what I'm gonna assume is the case. You have to assume that that's the case because this is a proud football player, and this is a guy that can eat your lunch at any given time. So you don't give him any kind of, it's not the Derrick Henry that we've seen before. Yes, he's in his prime, Derrick Henry. That's the Derrick Henry that the Raiders better prepare for.
One thing about the Ravens themselves, especially at corner, this team, the secondary, will get tested early on in the season. With the Ravens open up at Kansas City, then they're home against the Raiders, and then they go on the road at Dallas for week three. So the Raiders are in that sandwich spot. For the secondary, though, Baltimore Ravens are still very strong. Marlon Humphrey continues to shine. They also have Brandon Stevens. Nate Wiggins is now going to be jettisoned as a rookie corner, but from all intents and purposes, he's going to earn that spot. So are they better in the secondary, and how will that, you know, kind of affect what the Raiders are trying to do at corner or at quarterback? As you're not going to have any, like, early spots where you feel like, all right, Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew, this is a team that you can pass on. And Baltimore Ravens prove time and time again that you better be really good at decision making and make sure that you have a sound attack, because those young corners eat people alive.
Yeah, and then they have, you know, great secondary or great safeties as well. Always,
yeah.
Ball hawks. They've got ball hawks back.
Perhaps
there.
Perhaps the best.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be careful with the ball, and it's going to be. I've been to Baltimore. It's a hornet's nest. It's going to be loud. That'll be their home opener, I believe. Mm-hmm. Right? They go and they start on the road in Kansas City, so that's going to be their home opener. It's going to be muggy. It's still going to be that time of year where you're going to be dealing with some conditions, weather conditions. And, you know, so you got to bring your hard hat. And if you're whatever the quarterback is, Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell, you have to be careful with the football.
Yes.
Because this is a defense that is in attack mode at all times. And if you're going to make an error, they're going to be there to make you pay for that error. So, again, you know, we talked about the defense. There are some holes to fill. I think Patrick Queen is a bigger hole or a bigger loss than maybe, you know, some people are giving it credit for, the defensive coordinator as well. But, you know, and over the long haul, I think those types of losses are gonna show for the Ravens. I still think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't know that they're going to be the dominant regular season team that they were last year and finish with the top, you know, record in the AFC. But if you're the Raiders, you have to prepare for a dog day afternoon in Baltimore. That's just what you have to prepare for. That's what they force you to do. I like the mindset of the Raiders and Antonio Pierce because, honestly, I think he wants to build something that's very similar to what the Baltimore Ravens do. It's obviously going to look a little bit different because you don't have a Lamar Jackson as your quarterback. But I think the mindset that John Harbaugh sets the foundation with in Baltimore is something that the Raiders want to be about as well. So I would expect a knockdown, drag it out type of a fight. And that's if you're a Raider fan, regardless of what the outcome might be, if they go out there and put up a fight and fight all 12 rounds, you know, with the Ravens and put themselves in a position to win that football game at the end, however it ends up turning out, that would be a positive for the Raiders. And I don't expect them not to. I don't expect them to go to Baltimore and just, you know, oh, it's the second game of the season. We're supposed to lose this game. Whatever. You know, we're not gonna go there with the right attitude. I think the Raiders, 17 games, in a 17 game schedule, I'd be shocked if they didn't come correct pretty much every single game from a mindset perspective.
Yeah, I don't expect like the lulls where you're coming off of a big win or a bad loss and there's going to be like that hangover effect the next week. I don't see that at all. I see what you saw last year as a very consistent team. Now, after week eight, the mindset was very consistent. It wasn't up and down. And unfortunately, like the up and down was prevalent in certain eras, like even in the Gruden era. You couldn't find that consistent game in and game out kind of like tenor and, you know, and tone from the team where they were going to be always the same. And maybe it has something to do with the personnel, but it just feels like the kind of guys that they have in this year is the right mix.
Well, here's the thing. When you really do analyze the John Gruden era, the one part of the team that he didn't whether it was wasn't able to get to, or you know, some you know, sloppy drafts along the way. What they weren't able to fix was the defense. And so you're going to be susceptible on a week-to-week basis by how close can you, how slow can the defense slow down the other offense in, you know, on a week-to-week basis. There were too many games where they just got waylaid because they just weren't good defensively. They were not able to slow teams down. And that caused a situation where your offense had to basically score 25-plus points a game, really just to be competitive, right? And that's a tough task to ask your offense week in and week out to produce those types of outputs. So it always looked like they were susceptible to you know, highs and lows, but I think it was just more their defense kind of stunk. It wasn't good at all. They never got that thing to a point where they can literally rely on it on a week-to-week basis the way I think this Raiders team can. So even if we've seen this now a few times, Clay, last year, and you know, you knock on wood for the Raiders that it's not gonna, you're not gonna experience these types of things, you know, too much anymore. But we saw where the offense struggled last year, and even in spite of that, heck, the offense stunk against Kansas City. Let's be honest about it. In Kansas City, I was there. We all saw that the offense couldn't do squat. It was the defense that won that game.
Mm-hmm.
They scored twice. The defense scored twice, and on top of that, they basically shut down Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense. So that was a defensive win. I know at the very end of the game, you know, Zamir White sprung to life, was able to they were able to run the ball and eat the clock to put that thing away. But it was a bad offensive performance. There were bad offensive performances against the Vikings. There were also other games where the offense just was not able to do their part. But in spite of that, they remained close in games because their defense was playing such good football. And whereas under John Gruden, they were never able to get to that point where if the offense struggled, the defense, you know, could still keep it close. If the offense struggled under John Gruden, it was going to be a bad afternoon. It just happened time and time again. And there were times when the offense struggled, and that's when you saw some of the – look, that Atlanta Falcons game. Remember that? Where they were – it was
– terrible.
Yeah, and it was – they couldn't stop anybody, and the offense – you know, the Saints game, you know, that was under
the shutout.
Josh McDaniels. But, mm-hmm. again, the offense struggled. The defense wasn't ready at that point. Under Josh McDaniels, and it was just a laugher.
Offense only got past midfield until like late in the fourth quarter.
Right, exactly. And look, that might happen again, you know, with the offense. But even if it does, you hope that it doesn't, but it might. But even if it does, I don't think this defense is going to be the type of defense that's going to lay down and let the other team score 35 points. I don't see that happening. So whatever offense you're going to get on a week-to-week basis, and there might be a time or two where it's going to be an offensive struggle, but you have your defense to kind of help save the day or help keep it close so that you can get it together enough offensively to make it a competitive game, or else, mm-hmm. or even give yourself a chance to win. So those highs and lows that those Raider teams experienced under John Gruden, I do wonder how much of it was just the fact that they just could not rely on their defense to stabilize things when the offense just had a rough day.
Yeah, I think so. I think there was a lack of talent. There was just a personnel problem. There was just a lot of hopes and prayers that you were hoping it would go over. But they were never relying on guys that were homegrown.
Well, they were homegrown guys. They just weren't good.
Well, there was a lot of one-year players.
There were a lot of rookie players that weren't ready to play to play.
And you know, you're drafting guys that tried to play right away, and it wasn't working out.
Right.
And, you know, for the Ravens though, when you think about, did they improve this year from last year? It's hard to improve if you had the top rated defense and points allowed. That's hard to improve on that.
But even if you don't remain
number one, how good is this team if they're still in the top five? Because they still, like in the offense for red zone or third downs, they're a top 10 team. In the red zone, the offense ranked seventh in touchdown percentage, and the defense ranked second mm-hmm. in allowing touchdowns in the red zone. So whatever this team is going to be like, the Raiders have to play an almost perfect game to go and beat Baltimore at home.
Yeah, they have to match their intensity and production defensively. Number one, you can't turn the ball over. That's just feeding into that Hornets nest that we talked about, because that's a crazy, crazy place to go play. And they're kind of a momentum team, so their defense creates the momentum, and then the offense picks it up, from there. Really, when you think about the Ravens, and you're right, they may not be the number one ranked defense this year because of some of those losses, including their defensive coordinator. But if they fall down to number five, that's still really, really good. Especially,
still a dangerous team.
Yeah, and really, when you think about Baltimore, there's one box left to check off for them, and that's to get to a Super Bowl. That's to win a Super Bowl, but first get to a Super Bowl. And that's, I got to see it to believe it. I still believe that when it gets right down to it, history has shown that over the last few years, but, is Lamar Jackson ready to take his team to a Super Bowl? And he's been a great regular season quarterback, but when it gets down to it, it feels like his style of play for a defense to defend it, it's a little bit easier to defend that type of a quarterback when you're zeroing in and focusing in on how to stop the Baltimore Ravens in a one-game situation where all your advanced scouts have got all the information and you are dialing it up defensively and really singularly focused on that task. He can be slowed down. He can be stopped. And in some ways, he plays right into it. So the playoff statistics don't lie with Lamar Jackson. And I do wonder if he's going to be the guy that ultimately gets them over the top. But if so, he's going to have to make some changes and improvements when it gets right down to it in playoff time.
Yeah, I mean, especially that game against Kansas City. Okay, so you've tied it up with, in the first quarter, with Zay Flowers getting that 30-yard pass from Lamar. But then what? Like, they had no way to deal with the adjustments that the Chiefs were putting on them.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you that the way the Chiefs were able to lock down and keep Baltimore from doing anything they wanted was very telling. And that shouldn't have been, because it seemed like Baltimore, with their window being open and having the home field advantage last year against the Chiefs, that should have been a W. And it makes you wonder, like, when teams don't go through those major successes and get to a title game, when that window is there, when does that window start to shut?
That said, I can't put the Zay Flowers fumble on Lamar Jackson at the goal line for the touchback. It's a huge, huge play. And, so that wasn't his fault. That wasn't Lamar's fault. And who knows what happens if that thing is the touchdown right there, or they get the ball at the one-inch line and, they punch it in. So, I'm definitely focused in on Lamar being better in the playoffs, but on the flip side, if Zay completes that play right there rather than fumbling it for those are the most crushing blows when you fumble it out of the end zone or out of bounds in the end zone, where it goes from literally a touchdown to not only do you not have the ball, but not only do you not get the touchdown right there, it's not first and 10 or first and goal to go. The other team has the ball. It's just a crushing blow. So things could have been different had Zay held on to the ball.
I mean, that was you could hear the money being exchanging hands all over Las Vegas, where people had such high hopes for the Ravens, and they just tickets were being thrown out and ripped up in half, and it was a big confetti fest, like Rip Taylor was walking down the aisle with a bowl of confetti. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side here and get your thoughts at 702-365-9200. Matt Holder from Silver and Black Pride and Tape Don't Lie will join us at 8 o'clock. We'll talk to him about some things that he uncovered with Zamir White, as well as John Jenkins and more. It's Raider Nation Radio.
Down the 50, near side 40, 35, 30, and Zamir White might have just salted away a Raiders win. He's brought down at the Chiefs' 25-yard line on a 44-yard pickup and a first down for Las Vegas.
Thanks for being with us here on Raider Nation Radio, the morning tailgate. That was Jason Horowitz, Raiders Radio Network, with the call from Christmas Day. On Raiders Radio Network, we'll talk to Matt Holder from Silver and Black Pride. He'll go over some thoughts on what the run game could look like with Zamir White. We'll talk about more of that in just a few minutes, top of the next hour with Matt. From the text line, 702-365-9200, getting your thoughts on looking at the AFC North opponents the Raiders are going to face, and did they improve from last year. We'll go around the league throughout this week, but we're starting here on Raider Nation Radio this week with the AFC North. We'll get more thoughts. And, you know, for Zamir White to kind of ice the game against the Chiefs in that game, there was nothing that the Ravens could do against the Chiefs when they had a chance to beat them in Baltimore in that divisional game. See, that's the thing, like, can you get these big runs when you need them, especially if other parts of your game isn't working? And for Baltimore, that window was open for them to actually go and really, you know, have that game on a tee for them to knock out of the park. When you would now have, the expectations and all sorts of different turnover in personnel, I wonder how things will match up. And if there's a vulnerability, what do you think it might be, though, for this Ravens team as we look forward down the road? If they're so sound and they're so good each and every year, but can they replicate a first place 13-4 record again? I'm not sure. But if there's a vulnerability, what would it be?
Well, if you're talking about the playoffs and last year's championship game, you can't have your quarterback completing 54% of your passes. And, these are the stats. I'm not making up the stats. Lamar Jackson in the playoffs is a career 57% completion percentage quarterback. 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. That ain't going to get it done, folks. You can't go into an AFC championship game at home after working as hard as you did to get that game in your spot against the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs. Everything was set up for the Ravens to win that game, to have their coronation, to go to the Super Bowl, to finally, punch their ticket to the big game with Lamar, and have your quarterback complete 54% of his passes. 20 of 37, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, a rating of 79.5. The week before, he was great. 16 of 22. It's on a lot of throws, but was really crisp with a 72% completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, took care of the ball. 152 yards, so he wasn't like the reason they won that game, but he certainly wasn't the reason he didn't put them in any kind of harm's way. AFC championship game, you need better from your quarterback. So right now, until further notice, and I'm just going to say it, Lamar Jackson has been the weak link of the Ravens when it gets to the playoffs. He's a different quarterback in the playoffs that he is, during the regular season. And until he shows that in the biggest moment, on the biggest stage, he could do better than what he's done, which it hasn't been good at all in the playoffs, that's the biggest concern that the Ravens have.
That's all down to him. I mean, he was like running at an MVP-type clip, but it still wasn't enough. You still run out of gas when you need you the most.
And yeah, I don't know if it's gas. I don't know what it is, but he's not efficient in the playoffs. He's an inefficient quarterback in the playoffs. And again, I don't make those stats up. When I say, when I hear that Dak Prescott, struggles in the playoffs, go look at his statistics in the playoffs and then go look at Lamar Jackson's. There's struggles, which is what Lamar has done, mm-hmm. and there's playing reasonably well, which is what Dak Prescott has done in the playoffs. His team hasn't gotten it done, but he hasn't been the main culprit of some of those losses as Lamar has with the Ravens. 6 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. Again, you can't have those types. You can't have that from your quarterback, especially you're going in with a guy that helped carry you to this point. And then when it all comes to the biggest stage and the biggest moments, and that's where he plays his worst football. He has to get that turned around. There's plenty of time for him to do that. So I'm not sitting here and saying that he's never going to be able to get it done. But up until this point right now, that's been a big issue for the Ravens. And so until he is able to get over that hump, then it's always going to be something that you have to be thinking about.
Yeah, especially if you got that home game for a championship game, your win sends you to the Super Bowl, but yet you're only on the field 22 minutes out of the game. The time of possession, that's dreadful.
Right.
And like that whole game, they never had the ball. The offense never had a chance to do anything, and it was because every time they did, they beset themselves with bad penalties. They had about 8-9 penalties in that game for 100 yards. A forced fumble lost, as well as an interception. That'll never get it done. And I think for this year, if you're still looking at a Ravens team that has holes on the offensive line, they're trying to patch it up, I can see them maybe just going 10 wins this year. I don't know how the up if any, are really going to make up for the problems on their offensive line, and then working in with a Derrick Henry that might be a little more limited than they expected.
Yeah, part of that to me is going to be, all right, you know, you got a full season of Joe Burrow with the Cincinnati Bengals. Where's Deshaun Watson? Like, if their division got better, and you know, just by having Joe Burrow on, if he can stay healthy, of course, but if he can be out there for the balance of the season, 17 games, 16 games, then to me that automatically makes the Bengals a better product, a better team, and so you have to account for that in that division, and so you're going to be playing a healthy Joe Burrow and a healthier Cincinnati Bengals. If Deshaun Watson can ever get back to being Deshaun Watson, that's the team that really fascinates me in that division, is the Cleveland Browns, because they're ready, set everywhere else on that roster. They need their quarterback. They need Deshaun Watson to give them the return on investment that they were expecting. And if that can happen, then they're that much stronger. And so now those are four games that the Ravens, that look a lot different this year compared to last year. Because if Burrow is back to being Joe Burrow, and if Deshaun Watson can get back to being Deshaun Watson, all of a sudden that changes the dynamic of those two opponents. And then, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers. What does Russell Wilson bring to the Steelers? Is he? I expect him to be a significant upgrade, or at least an upgrade over the slop that they had there the last couple of years with Pickett and Mason Rudolph and, you know, everyone else that they ran out there. So now all of a sudden that turns into six games that could be a much bigger challenge than they were last year, because the quarterback play is better in those three teams.
All right, we'll get into those games and those teams in the second and third hours. Matt Holder will join us next from silverandblackpride.com. All that and more. It's Raider Nation Radio. Vinny and Clay on the Monday.